It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Boys will be boys. I think Dahl's got bumped before, and then he evened up the score. I wouldn't read too much into that. Just, you know, we want competitive practice, so I think every now and then the emotions will run a little bit high, but that's a good place to be.
Me and Krebsy apologize. I apologize to him, so it's all good. That's how it is out there. So it was really bad money. I shouldn't have done that. So, but yeah, it's competitive out there. We want to get better. We want to push each other. So it's good to the right extent.
You know, we like to practice hard. I think that's been the motto this year, and that's what we're doing. So, you know, you try to practice like you play, and that's what we're doing. And then off the ice, we're buddies, so it's all good.
Fighting for wins and on the heels of one, even if it seems like an awfully long time ago. Yes, the win against the Florida Panthers was on Saturday. We're back with Sabres Live. I have but one question for you, Marty. Who did you want to fight among your teammates in practice over the course of your career?
There was many that I wanted to fight, not because they were hitting me or not. Maybe Eric Bolton, because he never stopped. He always crashed into me.
Do you always pick bad matchups?
I don't know. That was a bad matchup. And Bolts was my buddy. So, but I would be like, seriously, like he would come like 100 miles an hour down the middle of the ice and he would never not stopped, or he would stop last second and bump into me. So it would be Bolts. But like, Duffer, we're all good because I got my referee jersey on today for those watching on MSG. Like, I got my Mike Lego, by the way, signed jersey that I got one of those years at their referee camp. And I think not only do I want to be a NHL referee, there was a couple of goaltender interference calls that happened over the weekend that we can talk. But more importantly, I want to be an NFL referee. I actually was looking for a yellow flag to put in my pocket, but they took all my yellow flags yesterday and they threw them on the field in the Bills game. So that was atrocious. So that's why I'm supporting the NHL referee union, but really I want to be an NHL and NFL referee.
What was the best practice fight you did witness between teammates?
This is a funny one. It was not so much of a fight, but it was a funny morning. And, you know, Thomas Vanek in the 05-06 season was a healthy scratch in the playoffs. And in a drill that featured a regroup, like you would go in the neutral zone, you regroup, it was just the extra guys. So it was like Roy Fitzpatrick, myself, Thomas Vanek, Andrew Peters. There was a bunch of extras. And you're supposed to regroup, and doesn't matter if you're a forward or a defenseman, you're supposed to communicate ahead of time, hey, I'm the forward, you're the defenseman. So when you regroup in center ice, one is going to regroup a little shallower than the other, and you end up playing a one-on-one. Well, it just so happened that Van and PD did not communicate well and did not see each other. And when they got to center ice to regroup, they absolutely hammered one another. And when they both got up, PD was like, pretty mad, and he threw his gloves up and grabbed Van. Roy Fitzpatrick jumped in the pile, and the practice wasn't even over. Like, it was okay, should have picked up your stuff and continue practice. And I believe like PD left the ice. He was like, I'm done for the day. Like, if that's the way it's gonna be, I'm done. And I was dying, like I was laughing. But it was it was not a long fight. It was not a, hey, let's go toe-to-toe tilt, let's go. And let, a lot of times you, players are going to say, let him go, let him go. Let him figure it out, let him go. Often, other times, guys are going to get in and step in. This was, by the time Fitzy stepped in, it was over and they were off the ice.
Which current Sabres would actually make for a good in-practice tilt?
Oh, well, it depends if you want to win or lose. Like if I'm looking to win my fight, I'm not picking Dennis Gilbert. I think Gibby is pretty tough. I'm also not picking Jordan Greenway because he's massive, or Tucky or Tage, right? So you got to pick your spot. That's not
Gilbert and Greenway
about.
Would be a good bout.
Yes.
But
yes.
We're never going to see it. And that's the whole point
Jordan
of this is like, stop making
easy,
a big deal out of everything. And
but Jordan
we move
is
on.
Such an easy guy, easygoing guy. He's so mellow. He'd be like, why are we fighting?
You but know? Hard to play against, as we saw on Saturday when he's at his best. Oh, yeah. So how much of his presence and others was significant in the 5-2 win over the Panthers?
Jordan Greenway's presence was amazing. And this is a game Saturday where Lindy Ruff mentioned after the game that because of, obviously, Peterka not playing, Sam Lafferty not playing, he had to rely on 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, but basically said, ahead of time, I'm going to roll 3 lines. Beck Malenstein played a minute 50. Zach Benson played 8 minutes, but that's because he wasn't 100%. So Krebs filled in on the top line with Thompson and Tuck. And then you had the Cousins line with Kulik and Quinn. And then you had the McLeod line, which I thought was really good with Zucker and Greenway. Here's the thing. Greenway, in any spot you put him in that game, and really this season has had an impact. Penalty kill, huge impact. 5-on-5, forecheck, huge impact. Getting that first goal against Florida in tight to tie it at 1. Big goal, huge impact. So I think Jordan Greenway, for me, had the biggest impact. But I like Jack Quinn's game in the first period. And obviously, I thought Devin Levi was really good also.
Yes, and then you have a long gap now until the next game, which doesn't come until tomorrow. They are in Pittsburgh. The game's on TNT. We won't resume our broadcast duties until Thursday when Buffalo is at Columbus. Columbus has their home opener tonight, which will be an incredibly emotional affair. And then Saturday, Buffalo will be in Chicago to close out the 3-game trip. So
Not an easy trip when you look at the Sabres.
Well, if you can identify an easy trip for me in today's world of pro sports, that you go
No, but
right
I
ahead.
Think if people look at the schedule...
But I'm trying to get
schedule,
you to, and Razor to, you know, not
no, but I'm saying that
say
not
things
for, like
that. We don't need if, to say things like that
No, but
anymore.
I'm saying, like, for people that hear you say they're in Pittsburgh, they're in Columbus, and they're in Chicago, you know, maybe they're listening to the show and thinking, oh, that's an easy trip. No, I want to point out, like, I think if you played the Rangers and the Devils and you went up to Toronto, people would say, oh, that's a tough trip. Like, all trips are tough, but sometimes the optics are this may be an easier trip. Pittsburgh hasn't had the best of start to the season, but they had a comeback win against Montreal yesterday, and they opened out the floodgates a little bit with their depth, right? The Eller and those guys scoring goals. Letang got on the board, Malkin with an empty net goal. And you go to Columbus. Well, this is going to be a very emotional week for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I feel you know, players are going to really step up. They just had a big win over the weekend as well. And Chicago has looked really good. So to me, Chicago goes in, wins in OT, and then beats the, the Winnipeg Jets. They lost in OT to the Jets, and then they won against Edmonton. So they're a tough team right now.
The game away against
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
They did.
A minute away from a win. They ended up being less than a minute away from an overtime loss. It was brutal. But you're right. They're 1-1-1. And if they go that way and end up a 500 club, people are going to say, wow, what an improvement under Luke Richardson this year, right? Those are just the facts. As far as Pittsburgh, I think 2-2 is a pretty good start for them based on all the things that they've, you know, been kind of dealing with and not looking pretty at times in the process. 2-2 is a place where all Sabre fans wish they were, as opposed to 1-3. Now, that's the thing, right? It's about optics, like you said, and the sample size is still so small, but wouldn't you, like, you would love to be 2-2 right now. And so Pittsburgh is that. Columbus is 1-1. So all these teams right now are 500 out of the blocks.
Yeah.
And you know, just when it comes to the, you know, the needling that we give each other and the disagreements about terminology and usage, I have to say last night watching the Avs game and Mark Moser on play-by-play and Mark Rycroft on color, you know, Rycroft is like early in the game, oh, you know, I hope the referees just put the whistles away and let him play. And then there's this pause. And Moser's like, I don't think I agree with that.
Yeah. Well,
and then they get into it, right? Because I'm with Moser. I'm like, call the game properly. Don't ever put the whistles away. Do what you're supposed to do, right? That's my thinking. So
well,
I love
that was the Bills game yesterday, Duffer. At one point, Troy Aikman goes, well, I mean, you can't be calling that many penalties. And then he's like, but if it's a penalty, you got to call it, which was kind of funny because I think he was trying not to criticize the refereeing, which was brutal. There was so many calls that were not penalties that were being called. And you're watching the replay and you're like, that's not a penalty. And you watch, but then it was going on both teams. So you're like, okay, who am I to complain? The Jets are getting penalized that shouldn't be penalized. And the Bills are getting penalized where they shouldn't be penalized. So you're like, okay, it's going to even itself out. Mm. But the game and the flow of the game was being affected. So Troy Aikman is like, well, they shouldn't be calling that many penalties. This is ridiculous. Although, if it's a penalty, you got to call it. Which he was the guy, he walked himself back to the same spot.
And we all do it. And that's why we're constantly trying to take ourselves out of those habits and think before we speak. You know, like a pause is a good thing in our world. And it's an unintentional, at times, attention grabber.
Yeah.
But it also allows the brain to catch up with what you're about to say.
And, or what you just said. So you get the
correct. Yes, exactly. What
but
you
I
just
do
said.
Agree yeah. that like when let's see, I'll make comments sometimes where it comes back from like the playing days in the locker room and I'll be like, oh, why are you calling this? Let him play. Mm-hmm. But that may be one instant. I don't mean let him play 2 minutes later if there's a flagrant call to be called or last minute of the game if you're going to call a penalty. But sometimes there's a little ticky-tack in the middle of the game and I'm like, just let him play. Mm-hmm. But it's not a generalization. And I think we do that often. And then we realize late, like somebody radios us or TV us on social media and they're like, well, Marty just said the boys should be able to play. And I'm like, well, that's not a general realization.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you one. You can, if you want to bounce back and forth here on things you're thinking of that are important in your mind as the Sabres embark on this road trip. My concern is Zach Benson.
Yes.
I'm interested that he's practicing the way he's practicing on the heels of the coach basically not playing him for almost for the majority of Saturday night because, and I loved, by the way, how Lindy described at the postgame presser, emptying the tank, shortening the bench, securing the absolute needed victory. And in that sense, it came sort of at the expense of Benson, but with a clarification and an admission really from the head coach, like, I don't think he's close to 100%. So I'm intrigued by the Benson situation here in that we all know this kid's desire, but how do you, or should I say, what are your expectations for Benson usage on this trip?
Well, the expectation for Benson usage is going to depend on everybody else's health. And I think if Benson is 90%, 85%, but Peterka can't go, you're going to have to rely on Benson. If Lafferty can't go, you're not going to empty the tank knowing you have a 3-4 on the first night. Then go, okay, we're going three lines. Well, you may have to rotate guys in that don't have 100% of everything. If Peterka is healthy and plays tomorrow against the Pittsburgh Penguins, then, okay, you can ease up on Benson a little bit. If Lafferty is going to play, then you can say, okay, maybe we're giving Benson a night off here on Wednesday, letting him get even more let him get healthier for Thursday or even Saturday. Mm-hmm. But right now the Sabres had to play 11 forwards and 7D because they don't have the two extra forwards. They have two extra defensemen, but they don't have two extra forward. And if you don't want to put anybody on IR, because you're hoping they're going to come back sooner than what IR would be, which is a week that you have to be, without playing games, Well, then you go with 11-7 and you try to figure it out again. Yes. If Paterka can't play and if Lafferty can't play, well, Benson has to play. You can't go 10-8. You're not going to do that.
Well, you can.
You could. I just said you can't. You could. There's another one of those, like, catch yourself.
Words are important, right? Yeah. Okay, so what's
on 9-9 if you want.
What's on your mind, Sabre-related, here?
I think if Benson's practicing today, then that means that he's not 100%. They're going to manage it, but I think he's...
But do you have something else Sabre-y here before we get into, like, pregame mode tomorrow, you know, on Sabres Live, obviously?
Well, Paterka aspect is huge to me because I look at Quinn and Cousins, and I think they played a really good game against the Florida Panthers, but the production is still not there. And producing in the NHL is important, especially when you want to get the season going the right way. So I'm looking at how do you get Quinn and Cousins to be able to produce. That's the big thing. So I know we're going to find out more about Paterka tomorrow. You know, they're going to morning skate in Pittsburgh. Is he in the rotation? Is he in the lineup? We'll know more. Then we can talk about it. But right now for me is, okay, Thompson has scored. That's great. Tuck has scored. That's great. Who's going to play with them? Is it Benson? Who knows? But how do you get Cousins and Quinn producing and getting, you know, on the goal score sheet? That would be my priority going into Wednesday night.
Are you optimistic for them based on Saturday, despite lack of results? Yes.
Yeah, I'm optimistic for Quinn. I think this was the best that I've seen Quinn play this year. And like the two games in Europe, I told many people, I'm putting them aside. That was, you know, a one-off over there. Well, a two-off, but a one-trip off. And, you know, LA was better, but Quinn wasn't good against LA. He was really good against Florida. So I think I'm optimistic it's going to open up.
Does the goalie rotation change at all?
It doesn't, but it's starting to... I don't want to say it's starting to bug me because it's too easy. Like, coaches are never going to go line one, line two, line three, line four, line one, line two, line three. Like, you're going to switch that up at some point. You want to double shift your top line. You want to see if they can, you know, maybe you can catch the other team on a matchup or whatnot. Like, you're going to change that. I feel like with goaltending is the same thing. It's too easy to say, you go one game, you go to next. You go one game, you go to next. And I hate that because there's times where you play a good game that you would want to get right back into it. Mm-hmm. And it's not because the other goalie is not playing well, but sometimes you say, hey, I want to play two in a row. And so I get that you've got probably Wednesday and Thursday where they're going to split. But I think having your deciding on a starter Wednesday and then the other guy going Thursday is a big decision. I mean, the easy decision is say Lucan on Wednesday, Levi Thursday, and then you see who you want to go in on Saturday. But I wouldn't be afraid to say, you know what, let's take a timeout, despite the fact they've both given up 5 goals. But I think Levi has been more comfortable. I would say, let's get Levi in on Wednesday. And Lucan, and you know you got Thursday, but I'm switching the rotation a little bit here because I want to just see if I can get a little... emptying the tank may be the same thing, but get a win right at the start of the trip. Get that Wednesday win and then go from there. I'm not saying Lukanen can get the Wednesday win, but I'm like, okay, let's switch it up and get Levi in on the front end and Lukanen on the back end. Look at the New Jersey Devils. They had back-to-back last night and tonight. Well, they didn't say, hey, we got to go Markstrom number one. And they looked at the schedule and they said, you know what? Allen played well against Buffalo over there. We got to get him in there. We're not worried about switching the rotation or whatnot. Allen had a shutout last night against Utah. And Markstrom is going tonight. So now they can steal 2-2 because of the way they approach it. I want the Sabres to say, how do we go in there and steal 2-2? And I think maybe that's by going Levi 1, Lukanen 2. Maybe not. But I just think that would be a good time to change it up.
Not that it matters necessarily, but from an information standpoint, Lukanen is 2-2 lifetime against the Penguins, has very good numbers. He is also 3-1 against Columbus with less than great numbers, but obviously some significant run support.
Run support is huge.
Levi has never played Pittsburgh, but is 1-0 against Columbus with, again,
with great run support,
a fair amount of run support, yes. So, which is nice to say, because over last year, especially in the case of Luukkonen and all of his very good numbers in almost every category post-Christmas,
yeah,
the one thing that prevented him from grabbing even more attention league-wide was the lack of run support, where it was very middle of the pack when he was playing, right? So it didn't help accentuate what was truly transpiring, which was his consistency in the crease and top 10 in every meaningful category, you know, for goaltenders. So these are things that, again, you come off of a 5-goal output against Florida, and it was wonderful to see Spencer Knight back in goal for the Panthers, and he may well get the turn tonight for them against
Columbus.
Looks
like he is, yes.
But Knight was not, obviously, Bobrovsky in that game. So now it takes us back to, don't overanalyze the wins. You got the win and you move on. But clearly, if you're being honest about everything, the offense is going to have to expect to dig even deeper and deeper and deeper every time you have these matchups, because you would expect goaltending to be a little bit better than what the Florida Panthers showed on Saturday night. That's just the reality of the game, right?
Yeah, and if you look at the expected goals after the Florida game, it was 3 for Buffalo to 2.4 for the Florida Panthers. So yeah, it was a 3 to 2.5 type of game. It ended up being 5-2. I get it. And, you know, that's just, you know, sometimes the numbers are going to shape up. But it was more like if Spencer Knight had been good, like, and I'm thinking maybe the Jokke Aho goal, for example. That one doesn't go in.
Samuelson.
The Samuelson goal, yeah, whatever. Like, it's just, okay, so maybe it's a 3-2 game, like the expected goals are saying. Yeah. I still think the Sabres managed the better of the scoring chances. The biggest, the number of scoring chances was in the Sabres' favor. And so you put at least the numbers on your side, which they did against LA, and it didn't turn out to be that way. And so you move on and you do it again, and you hope to get the result.
What an effort by the Panthers yesterday to dig in again without their top two players in Barkov and Tkachuk. I say that in quotations because it's hard to identify the top two players on the Panthers, but they would be two of them. And they found a way to continue to beat Boston, which is such an incredible feather in their cap. Honestly, like,
not in Boston's lap, but in Florida's cap.
Right.
Yes.
But like, this is not easy to do. The Bruins have been the best winning percentage team in the league for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, basically going back to expansion of 1967. Like, as a franchise, all they do in the regular season is win. And for the Panthers to have, you know, become kind of masters in this matchup, even while depleted, is super impressive.
And what was impressive last night is because usually if you say, okay, Tkachuk is there, he's going to get under your skin. And
exactly,
Barkov is there and he's going to defend Pastrnak and Marchand.
Yes.
They did it without those two. They got under Boston's skin and they defended the top guys. And when it was 2-2 and Boston gets a power play in the second period to maybe score and go up 3-2, Sam Reinhart comes through with another a shorthanded goal, his second of the season.
Lundell,
I talked about shorthanded goals the other day, right? Like, Florida's given up a lot of shorthanded goals. Like, last season, they were seventh worst, but they score a ton of shorthanded goals. And Lundell is the one, like, if you're going to say no Barkov, no Tkachuk,
it's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Who do you rely upon? Bennett, Reinhardt, Verhaeghe, Lundell, right? And it was Reinhardt and Lundell in that game. But even like when Pasternak hit Nate Schmidt, and then, you know, Marchand went after Nate Schmidt, I'm thinking, why are you losing your mind? Like, stay, like, Pasternak's the one that engaged in the hitting.
Well, Pasternak tried to get in, and then Marchand jumped before it was technically a third man.
Yes.
And he's lucky he only got 2 minutes, considering that the gloves were off before he even came into the
thing. And he skated 15 feet, 20 feet to get there.
Exactly. But you're right. Like, it was Schmidt. And look, Nate's been around forever, which is why, like, previous years when they've added depth on the blue line, like, I knew or thought that this Schmidt pickup would be really good for them. He doesn't have to play every game, but he's going to be very veteran-like when he does, which is a terrible cliche, but he's offensive, but he's unafraid. And you look at him and you look at Verhaeghe in the final minute, getting in that, you know, kind of, again, getting in their face, being willing to get in their face, cause them to lose their you-know-what in the final minute, and frustrations mounted, and the Bruins weren't able to make a push because they found themselves shorthanded. And it's great. Like, it wasn't Tkachuk. And that's, or Bennett for that matter, you know, it's other guys. And I think with saying it without saying it, that's exactly what the Sabres are trying to be, right? Every team is trying to be this. Obviously, the Panthers are the reigning Stanley Cup champions. But if you don't show it in all situations through the entire depth of your lineup, then what are you, right? Yeah, you're just a bunch of individuals. You have to be a team in this process here.
Boston got pushed around now, not once this year, twice, by the Florida Panthers in on opening night and this one. So I think when you look at it, Florida definitely has the number for the Boston Bruins, and it gets in their face and gets in their heads. And Boston has not been able to respond. It's not the same Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara Boston team that they calmed themselves down. I feel like Marchand is the captain, and he got himself fired up so much that he wanted to go crazy, and that didn't work for them. So that was that. Hey, quickly, and maybe we do it after, but I sent a group text to our group yesterday when the Ottawa Senators won 8-7 against the LA Kings. I said, you know, the Red Blacks with the Rouge to win the game, because a Rouge in a CFL is 1 point. Yeah. And basically that would be like a CFL type score at some point, 8-7 because of a Rouge. I also send that same text to another group of people. I do some, you know, radio work in Montreal. And I said, Red Blacks win with a Rouge, 8-7. And they responded, no, Red Blacks lost to the Alouettes, 19-12. I didn't realize there was an actual Red Black game yesterday against the Montreal Alouettes. So it didn't resonate the same way with our group here in the U.S. that don't pay attention to the CFL all that much, and the same group of people in Montreal that were paying attention to the CFL game. So,
well, shame on you for not knowing the CFL Canadian Thanksgiving schedule.
I should have known 100%.
I will tell you this. If the Ottawa-LA hockey game had lasted 10 more minutes, it too could have ended up 19-12. Like, oh my gosh. Like, Ullmark is out with a strain right now. So they're being cautious. Yeah. So Forsberg starts, gives up 3 on 9. Travis Green says it was nothing more than the fact that he gave up 3 on 9. Matt Sogard comes in, gives up 4 more. The quote from the coach, he was average. And that's putting it mildly. In fact, like, LA, for all of their problems in the game, choking away a 3-1, a 4-2, a 5-4, a 6-5 lead, they, in the final 15 to 20 seconds of regulation, all they had to do was hit the net. Sogard was incapable of making a save at that point, based on if you had seen the tying goal from in tight by Tanner Janot.
Oh, yeah.
That's so small. Mads Sogard would be the biggest goalie in the league if he actually stood up, right? But his sample sizes in the NHL are so small, as was his appearance on that tying goal. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the Kings just need to hit the net.
and they couldn't hit the net.
They tried to play backdoor, and yes. I think it was, who was Fiala backdoor, maybe? So. It was in his feet, and he couldn't get it and wanted to put it in, but yes.
But the one other thing, and this is relevant to league-wide discussion, and maybe the Sabres because they carry a lot of defensemen, but that's not really where I'm going with this. L.A. somehow pulled out a win in Buffalo, right?
Yes.
And they're 1-0-2 on their trip so far, so they have to be content with that, despite the chaos and downer that yesterday was, blowing that game in Ottawa. But what became so obvious, and I don't know how they're going to deal with this in the months ahead, was the absence of Drew Doughty.
Yeah, 100%.
So when Gavrikov, who I like, is playing 25 to 26 minutes a night, 3 to 4 minutes above his average time on ice, and Brant Clark, who had his first ever three-point game and may well be the future for the Kings, but even yesterday, only played 17 minutes,
yep.
Right? Like, obviously, Hiller is managing the ice time. They don't have anybody else, Marty. That defense core does not scream, play me more, I'm ready for this. They bring in Joel Edmondson on a long-term deal as a free agent, but you can't play him 25 minutes a night, and you start overtime with Gavrikov. He ends up being on the ice for 5 of the 8 goals against yesterday, all the 4 power play goals, so it's not like it was his fault. But you know what I mean? Like, if they start that overtime with Drew Doughty and the rush
chance... Or the power play, like Ottawa went 4 for 6, you mentioned, if they have Doughty killing penalties, it's a different story.
Yes.
And if you have Kemper making a save or two, it's a different story. Like, the goal, they're up 3-1 early in the second, and he gives up a long-range slap shot by Zach MacEwen over his glove side.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, you can't go down. Like, you see that puck coming from 65 feet away. Like, stay on your feet and catch it. At least it's going to hit you. That was bad. And also, they're up 2-0, and Fiala decides to punch Nick Cousins in the face right by the benches. And what does Ottawa do? They get on the power play. Sanderson score to make it 2-1. Like, LA had that game under control. Mm-hmm. 2 moments of the game. Undisciplined penalty by Fiala. Bad goal by Kemper. And all of a sudden, Ottawa's fighting back. And Ottawa... Ottawa was up 7-6 with Norris scoring a power play goal.
What was I thinking at that moment?
Should have bet the over.
Ryan Smolinski.
Oh, yeah, well.
Because we talked about him last week. And you're thinking about
Ryan
a 7-6 game involving Ottawa. And I'm like, ugh. Right?
I was thinking of the Seattle-LA game of the 9-8 game for you.
Okay, so
that's
almost 2 years ago. That happened in November of 2022.
Yes.
Incredibly, on that night, Seattle wins in overtime, 9-8. Martin Jones was in
for all eight goals against.
The Kings decided to use two netminders, Quick and then Peterson. And Cal never played another game for LA.
Nope.
Yesterday, the script is flipped in an 8-7 game where LA chooses to use Kemper the entire game. He gives up all eight and they lose. And I'm just like... Oh boy, here we go again. I mean, it was just such an unexpected result for Kemper based on how good he had been against Boston and Buffalo. So
it goes back to, I remember, what's his name now, coaching Seattle, that coached here in
Bylsma,
telling me, I was talking to him about coaches' decisions, you know, goalies or whatever. He says, it only works when it works. Basically, you can make all kinds of decisions. So for Seattle that day, it worked to keep Martin Jones in and giving up 8 and winning 9-8. And for LA, he probably should have pulled Darcy Kemper at some point, but it only works if it works. And it didn't work yesterday, so now he's being criticized for it.
I can assure you that if you want to be at Sabres games this year, mini packs will work for you. There's great flexibility with them. You can bundle 5 or more games together, pick the matchups you want, seat locations, of course, that work best for you, and enjoy savings off of box office pricing. Visit sabres.com/mini packs. Purchase yours today. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
With more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Is there a game this afternoon? It is a random Tuesday in October, after all. There are 9 tonight in the NHL, sadly. Yep. This is on the heels of 3 yesterday, obviously. Matinee games, because I know you love matinee. quickly. New Jersey is 4-1. Seamus Casey has 3 goals. What's the bigger story?
Seamus Casey and the way that he plays. And New Jersey is a good team, but listen, Seamus Casey maybe wouldn't even be in the NHL if it wasn't for Hughes and Pesci's injury. Correct. And we saw him at the Prospect Challenge. Like, Prospect Challenge to now having 3 goals and the way that he's played, and we saw him getting his first goal against the Sabres. Like, that's a great story for the New Jersey Devils.
Vegas is 3-0. Dallas is 3-0. Which is the bigger story?
That Vegas is 3-0, and you know, Hill has looked okay. Eichel and Stone, that line has been fantastic. Barbashev, and you know, they lost Marchessault, they lost Stevenson, even Ilya Samsonov got in the party. So Vegas for me is the bigger story. I think everybody thought Dallas was going to be fantastic.
Calgary and Winnipeg both 3-0.
Well, Calgary, I mean, seriously, I'm not talking about the Jets, so I'm not. And the Calgary Flames, look, they go get Anthony Manta. Whoa, look at Manta. He's flying out there. Huberdeau scoring. It's like it's a completely I don't know if the pressure not being on that team this year let them just start in a loose way, but they just look fun. And they look – oh, by the way, you mentioned Vegas. Logan Thompson going to play, get his first start with Washington tonight.
Stop looking at my notes.
I'm not looking at your notes. I just.
Well, when I get to the schedule tonight, that was going to be a talking point.
Well, you mentioned Vegas. I mean, they're at Washington, and Logan Thompson is playing against his old team.
He is. 0-3, Edmonton and Colorado. Yeah. What's the bigger story?
Goaltending.
No. Which is the more surprising, Edmonton or Colorado?
Don't this or that, Duffer. You don't have to have me pick by one team or the other. I say goaltending because it's grouping the two teams that are in 3 and they're really, really struggling. But I will say this. Edmonton being 0-3 is the bigger story for me. They went to the cup final last year. They were picked by many to be the cup favorite this year. The odds had them at number 1 or 2, depending on where you were. And they've got Dreisaitl. They got McDavid. They got Bouchard. They got Hyman. They got everybody. At least Colorado can say they don't have Landeskog. Now they don't have Drouin. They're missing some pieces, which is affecting the Colorado Avalanche.
What you're not mentioning is Nichushkin, Lekkonen, Devon Taves last night. Yeah. Will their goaltending tandem remain intact, or will, in fact, their future tandem this year be Kaapo Kähkönen and Ville Husso?
Well, you mentioned Ville Husso because he's on waivers.
He's in the minors now in Grand Rapids.
He's got cleared.
No, he did yesterday. He was assigned yesterday.
He could always be traded.
That's my point. Is few guys get claimed on waivers because
the money.
A team needs to get rid of a body to bring in a body, typically. So they'll make a
minor. You got to get rid of some salary to bring in salary and all of that. So don't pick a guy like that on waivers. But now Colorado is going to have to try to make it work now with the 3 goalies they have. And if we get to December and it's not good, they may not want to wait like the New Jersey Devils did wait too long last year. But I mean, at this point, look around the league. Who's going to help you? You're not playing well.
Reason I bring it up is because you threw out that wild idea of John Gibson when healthy, you know, would somebody take him at a reduced rate? And
again, I'm saying, does that help you?
But
my personal view says no, it doesn't help them.
Gibson at comparable or even reduced cost over Kähkönen, Husso, Onanen, Georgiev?
I'd say give Justus Enonen a chance.
He wasn't ready. He was last year. I'm saying this year when he came in off the bench the other night, it was not great, but you didn't
give him a start. Georgiev started all 3 games.
But maybe they've seen stuff along the way here, which...
I'm not at practice in Colorado. Unfortunately, I don't have a private jet flying me back and forth to see the Avalanche and everybody else's practice.
Would you really use it for that? Just to go back and forth for abs practice?
Well, maybe I'd go skiing in Colorado and then at the bottom of the hill go to practice. But no, I look at it. I say, give Justus Enonen a start. At least see what he's got in a start. Because last year he played really well for them in the second half of the season.
Yeah. Well, I'll focus on the defense here real quick. We mentioned the absence of Doughty in LA.
Yeah.
Sean Durzi is out right now, upper body injury for Utah. This could be devastating. They're already without Marino. And remember, major focus for this new franchise was having a veteran defense corps. Mm-hmm. So they, of course, lost their first game yesterday in the midst of not having Marino and losing Durzi in game. Devon Taves didn't play for the Avalanche. Liljegren is not, you know, he's out of favor in Toronto. The Oilers have issues on the blue line. There's probably another team or two that I'm missing when it comes to blue line issues. Like, do you see potential for somebody making a big splash for a defenseman?
Not
I know
yet.
it sounds crazy because it define big splash, but
Timothy Liljegren is not a big splash, but it is a significant transaction, and telling your team and your fan base, like, hey, we're making a deal because we feel like our defense is not good enough. Look, the Edmonton Oilers, we all knew this was going to be like that. They did lose CC, they lost Broberg, they lost Vincent Desharnais. Like, they lost pieces. Not that they're the biggest of pieces, but they lost pieces, and now you're trying to roll out Ekholm and Bouchard, and then Darnell Nurse with Travis Dermott on your second D pairing. It's not good. It's just not good. I think if the Edmonton Oilers call the Toronto Maple Leafs right now and says, you know what? What do you want for Timothy Liljegren? I think that Brett Treliving and Brendan Shanahan are going to say, we want a first round pick. Like, okay, like, let's ask for the moon. Why should we help you, the Edmonton Oilers, right now? And I get that teams do that often, but I'm saying I don't want to go help another team that's in misery right now. I want to let them suffer a couple more weeks. They're still going to be calling 2 weeks now from now to try to make a deal.
Spurgeon's another one who missed last game or was out with lower body injury day to day with Minnesota. And of course, we all know, you know, his injury passed recently. So it's tough. And it's made more interesting. Like, you know, we sit here and Buffalo's carrying eight defensemen, and you can look across the league. And like, even in the case of New Jersey, when you briefly mentioned Seamus Casey, like Hughes and Pesci are coming back here. Like, they're going to have a glut of defensemen, you know? And so this is just, it's just trying to project how quickly, and obviously it's way too early, but how quickly teams will make that kind of a move. And, you know, we'll
see. The problem is, like, a team like New Jersey last year waited so long to make a goalie move that they didn't make the playoffs. And now they got Markstrom in net. Now they also, you know, obviously brought in a new coach and Sheldon Keefe, and they've got a really good, healthier attack, right? And Dougie Hamilton is there.
Stephen Mason, 6 points. Paul Cotter, 4 goals, 5 points.
Exactly.
I know.
Sure, and Hughes down the middle. Like, you've got your boys, you've got your group. But the you know, you look back, and I'm sure if we talked to Lindy Ruff about it, not that he'd say, oh yeah, goaltending was a huge issue. I couldn't really play the way, and my boys were coming back to the bench and saying, man, we gave up another goal. Like, this is getting old. Yeah. But there's teams out there that by the time they get to a month from now, middle of November, that's when you start to really pick up the phone and making more noise. Like, you're hoping to figure it out now. And if you start, as you said, before the season started, if you start the month of October 2-8 in 10 games, you're still in it. But if you're 5-22 by Christmas or by the beginning of December, then you're in trouble. So the next month is going to be where you still hope to make it happen, to turn it around. But after that, you got to make calls.
Because of these storylines and others, like, I think the excitement still of the newness of a season, like, I can pluck any game off of this 9-game card tonight and find a reason to be super intrigued. Like, Tampa hasn't played very much, right? Obviously, we know the aftermath of the hurricane and just what day-to-day lives are like for the players, just trying to keep it normal, right? Well, they get Vancouver right now. Vancouver's had a tough start in their first couple of games, right? And now it's super interesting. You mentioned Logan Thompson against the Capitals, or pardon me, against the Golden Knights as a member of the Capitals. That's interesting. New Jersey and Carolina almost always ends up being like and with Stephen Nason going as well as he's going, you know, it's a good storyline. Florida, Columbus, obviously the honor, like the tributes that will be shown tonight and will be forever lasting in Columbus for the Gaudreaus. is, and with the presence, might we add, of Guy Gaudreau with the Blue Jackets, a practice like he had been with Philadelphia, but like, and you saw obviously the new player of the game ritual that they're going to have this year, right? The donkey hat, in honor of Johnny, because Johnny used to call everybody a donkey, which is hilarious. And it's endearing. Like when,
well, it's like Jaroslav Spacek calling everybody pigeon, and then they had the pigeon award. It's something that stays with your team.
We're talking about a superstar player, but for the fact that in the room, that's what people think.
Yeah.
Like that's endearing. It's a great, you know, as silly as it sounds, it's wonderful. And the fact that, you know, after
it's
losing
two
sons. It's
how to remember somebody perfectly. Mm-hmm. And I think that it takes something that nobody knows about. The rest of the hockey world had no idea. Johnny Gaudreau was calling everybody a donkey. And then they have the donkey hat. That's awesome. You know, those moments are important for, and I know legacies are words that are being thrown out, but I think that's part of Johnny Gaudreau's legacy. The fact that he was that easygoing of a guy that everybody loved, and they're like, you know, they could call each other donkey and laugh about it.
Back right after this on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
Oh, yeah.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
This is what happens when the show isn't on for a few days. We run out of time. So, Marty, you wore a jersey for a specific reason, so please give us what you've got.
So, Rempe, goalie interference was not goalie interference. Corey Perry, goalie interference was not goalie interference. Look, I get it. If you're going to be consistent, then you're going to have to call it all year. But I'm going to be paying close attention to those goalie interference calls. I think if the goalie initiates a contact with the player, even though he's...
That's why you're wearing this? I thought it was because of the NFL.
Well, yeah, because of the NFL too, but I got to start with NHL stuff. And the NFL...
But don't you know the time on the clock, Marty? Have some game awareness here. We don't have time to get into the NFL story.
Go Bills. They won, despite the fact they had to battle through all those flags. How about that? How about them Bills?
Clock management. Maybe a topic for tomorrow. The next installment of Sabres Live. It'll be a game day. We'll see you then. Yeah.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
The job market is constantly changing, and at Bowling Green State University, we're evolving too, working with industries to develop innovative majors in education, engineering, business, and healthcare that will give you an edge when you enter the workforce. BGSU is ranked as the number one public university in Ohio for career preparation by the Wall Street Journal. Personalized career coaching, networking opportunities, and hands-on immersive learning set you up for success. That's the BGSU experience. Learn more at bgsu.edu/careerready.